Hello, voices cracking. Hello, and welcome to I Want What She Has, a show that celebrates women's voices and their stories. I am your host, Teresa Widman. And on today's show, I'm excited to welcome Edie Pipers. Edie is a self-taught artist who picked up her first guitar at the age of 20 in LA. She wanted to learn a couple of chords so she could start expressing and writing. She did lots more than learn a couple of chords. She learned to record and produce her own music, and she's produced a lot and worked on a lot over the years. What we're going to talk about today is what she birthed in 2020, which was a brand new album called We Are the Ones. It just came out this past Sunday. We're going to listen to a couple of the songs on the show today. And another big aspect of Edie's work is her artwork, her painting. And she started painting in her late 20s when she was living in Nashville, which led to creating and publishing several children's books. She's also played around with animation and making music videos. I shouldn't say played around, even though that's the language from her website. She is fairly accomplished at making animation and music videos. And one of the things that I hope to talk about today is her philosophy on her work. She says that her process of painting, as with music, is about flow, of not believing that mistakes exist, that any part is part of the whole and the creation, which she says requires a great amount of trust and, of course, diligent work and practice. So thank you, Edie, for coming on the show. Hi.
Thank you, Teresa. Thank you.
It's nice to see you. The last time I saw you, it was the fall, summerish. We did a little outdoor thing.
Yes, at Sylvia's. Yeah.
Yeah, that was so nice. I can't wait until, I mean, I love the weather. I love the winter. I love the seasons. They all play an important role in my kind of happiness, but it will be nice when we can gather outside again.
I know.
Although I do think Sylvia would like us to gather outside right now at her house, despite all the snow. So we'll see what happens.
That might happen.
Good. We'll give a shout out to Sylvia. That's how I know you, really, right?
Yeah. Through Sylvia and through your studio in the yoga studio. And I mean, I guess Sylvia was the concept that made us connect in that way. But I was doing some classes at your studio.
Yes. The now closed studio. Yeah. That's, you know, part of life is death and reimagination.
Things end. Yep.
Yeah. So I feel like we should talk a little bit about your kind of creative trajectory. And then we'll talk about the most recent album. And so I'd like for you to kind of start with your childhood, if you wouldn't mind digging back there and thinking about your first memories of art and music. And when did that become something that was, that you were aware of?
Yeah.
Whether or not you were creating it or you knew it brought you joy, but I'm just curious to know when it came to you.
That's a fun question. I grew up in Holland, and I didn't grow up in a particularly artistic milieu, which is sort of like a regular middle class milieu. And I thought about this the other day, like, even though I say like art wasn't a big part of my childhood, I think still that I was encouraged to always, like a lot of kids, you know, like draw and make and craft. And so that was always there, you know, like the opportunity to do it was always there. And I was that kind of child who liked to be indoors and sit and just make, and, you know, whether it's like clothes for Barbie dolls or, you know, little drawings or whatnot. So I was already that was part of my early childhood that I can remember. And for music, that really didn't come into my life until like really actively listening to music as a teenager that came on. And I do have my dad used to listen to some really beautiful kind of new age music that I remember left an impact on me. So that was something that was around where, you know, it was like, wow, what's that? Like that, or stuff like Pink Floyd or some interesting sort of, yeah, floaty, cool musical aspects that I remember.
That's very cool.
Yeah, having an impact, you know, like an emotional impact.
Yeah. It's interesting too, just thinking about your dad being drawn to that type of music and then playing that. Did you have siblings?
That was in the 80s, I guess. Okay. So it was like maybe a few things like off the top of my head, I would like maybe like Vangelis, you know, movie kind of music as well. Oh, okay. Like those types of vibes, which I, even to this day, I love, like, and some of my early influences of my own in my teens, like Enigma was a huge band at that time. And that type of stuff was, yeah, I was completely lost in that. I loved it so much.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And when did you actually come to the U.S.? And why?
I was fascinated with the U.S., as I think a lot of us in Europe are and around the world. And then I came when I was about 20, after I'd already traveled a little bit and done little living periods in Paris, and I was in Australia, and I was sort of a bit like, what do I want to do? Where do I want to go? And then LA came on my radar, like kind of a friend of a friend type of thing, where they're like, you can always crash on my couch, that kind of. And then I ended up going to LA at 20, which is, I mean, it's kind of, was kind of crazy, but it was an adventure for sure.
And were you, I don't know why it's probably a revealing aspect of my personality and what was shaping myself, but were you thinking about like your work, you know, like, were you engaged in work? Were you going to school? Were you thinking about that? What was kind of on your mind as far as like what you were thinking about you were doing in your life when you were making that move to LA?
Yeah, I was thinking about that because I wanted to do something creative and I didn't know how to start that because it, you know, also again, like I did have like that sort of moment where after high school, I was like, could I go to an art academy or something like that? But then that was never for me, like going to school. So I was thinking about that. And I think that I felt that going to the States, maybe the mythology around America, whatever it was, like this sort of freedom idea that there was something here for me to break into, or that something could, you know, be broken open here more so than somewhere else. And I do think it did in LA. I definitely found my voice there. Like, I mean, or discovered my voice. Like I hadn't even really ever sang out loud in front of anyone. So when I went to LA, there was also this sort of drive and push behind me making a move like that. That was like, okay, well, if I'm doing that, then I'm actually going to do it. You know, like I'm actually going to, I don't know, like call up people in ads and be like, you need a singer, like that kind of thing. It was just, really. Which I did that type of thing until I learned very quickly that for me, it was about expressing, like you mentioned in the intro, like it was really about a little form of therapy almost, where I was like, this is about getting my thoughts and ideas and emotions into something tangible and outing them. So like getting a guitar and learning some chords so I could do my own thing with it. And not so much, like as much as I love singing, like it's definitely the one of the first ingredients of the whole thing. But then the expression of what I want or need to express at that moment is very much the other main ingredient. Yeah. I don't know if that answered the question.
Yeah, it did. And I guess the just to put some of the pieces together for me. Mm-hmm. So were you making art at that time? Were you?
No,
nothing.
Nothing. Okay. I was working in restaurants. I did a couple of stints as a model. Like I did that type of, I was working and always working, you know. Yeah. I always made sure that I was but not in the arts. No, mm-hmm. no. That was still mm-hmm. really just a dream. That was really just still an abstract.
Mm-hmm. And do you remember what was the thing that kind of clicked for you when you said, I'm going to sing in public? Like, was that a hard decision to come to, you know, or was it just like, okay, as you described sort of the momentum behind you of making this big leap to come to the US, that just kind of pushed you forward to do that? Or what was that thing that just you picked up the phone and reached out to somebody or answered an ad and said, okay, I'm going to do this?
It was a real drive that I can't almost put into words, like a sort of like something saying, do this. And then I just followed that instinct.
So, yeah, I get you. There was no resistance then. Like you weren't facing.
Well, there was a lot of fear. There was resistance, but I was like, you know, I'm going to bash through that. So there was resistance in the sense that my first ever performance just on an open mic night. I mean, it was, you know, like I was nervous like never before. So it was very fearful, but very necessary for me somehow to make those steps and to put myself in those situations and to learn that I loved doing it. You know, like, again, it wasn't something that I was just doing, just being like crippled with fear or something. It was also like, I really feel that there's something here that I love so much that I need to put myself into.
Yeah. Do you remember the types of things you were expressing back then?
Yeah. Yeah. Gosh, some interesting questions, Teresa. I love it. I was expressing things like, I just remember that first time I ever played live, there was this little song. I wouldn't remember how to play it or what it was exactly, but the lyric was like, you can't deny love. Like that was what comes to my mind right now. So I was talking about, you know, and it was also a lot of sort of turmoil in myself. I was 20, 21 year old, like, and I, so all the things of finding my place, who am I, life, like, and then, but there was always woven into it was sort of these elements of love, of faith, of, you know, doing what you believe you're meant to do, finding that your vocation. I think those things were always really important to me. And we're woven into it. Yeah.
It's so interesting to me to think about the human kind of struggle to come into an awareness of our purpose. Mm. I mean, I could say that I'm probably still going through that myself and in many ways, you know, and it's just so, it's so beautiful. Like it's such a gift to be aware of it and to navigate it, but it is also just, it can be very challenging sometimes. And
And it's also something I feel that is ongoing and changes. It's fluid. It's not like, you know, and as you mentioned again, also in the intro, for me, it changed at some point. And so I feel like it's something that I want to keep open as well and not be like, this is it. And then that's, you know, and then, cause that's also, detrimental, I guess, to your development. And yeah,
it is limiting. I've found myself struggling personally because society wants you to have a title, you know. They want to identify you, which is normal human behavior. Like our brains want to make sense. That's why sometimes I'm asking like mundane questions, because my brain wants to make sense of a story. And we do that, but it is, I think it is 100% limiting because then we you start to embody that. We identify that.
But that's almost like, I mean, language itself is that limiting factor, that this, the moment you have a conversation, you have to sort of put it all into this box called language.
Do you run up against any frustrations when you're trying to express through musical lyrics in the way that you convey through language, or do you feel like you're able to express that way?
Yeah, I hardly ever, like for this album, not at all. I mean, maybe once or twice that I had gaps where I'm like, I don't know what the lyric should be here. And I come back to it and I puzzle. I used to do that a lot more. Like I used to puzzle and think. And this whole album, there was no, all the words were 95% of the, like, was just kind of like, there, like it was almost something I didn't have to really think about, so it wasn't very cerebral.
I think this is a good time to just introduce the album by listening to one of the songs, and then we will talk about it after we've listened to it. And so the first song that we're going to listen to, which is funny because I was writing down my notes and I was like writing down the title, so I remembered which ones they were going to play. And this one, it's like, as soon as I get the song in my head, it is in my head, which to me is like, oh, it's a hit because it's just there. And it,
an earworm, they call it.
Yeah. So the first song is called In the Shadows.
There's a world where we long to be known. It's where we've gotta go. In this world is the key to our growth. It's where we've gotta go. Tangled up out of you, the undergrowth of you, in the shadows.
So we listened to the song In the Shadows, which is off of Edie's new album, We Are the Ones, which she just released on Sunday. And I thought I would take a moment here just to point out that you can find Edie and all of her creative offerings, both her website, and she has a YouTube channel which you can see all the beautiful videos that she has created that accompany many of the songs from this album. But her website is ediart.com. It's ediart.com. So you can go check it out there and see all the other cool stuff. Is there anything else that we should say about how folks can find you, Edie, or get the album? It's from your website, right?
Yeah, the website has all the info and the links to wherever. It's on all the major platforms. Yeah.
Excellent. So the concept of the shadow is a bit of an elusive concept for me sometimes. But I'd love to hear, do you feel like talking a little bit about the meaning of the song, or is that something that you you don't want to?
Okay. Oh, yeah. What's the song about? Well, so in this world, I'm almost like when I go through the lyrics and then
which is cool too. I'll just point out that the lyrics are on the YouTube links for the songs.
The lyric videos are there, and then underneath in the description there are the written out lyrics too. Yeah. So there's a world where we long to be known. It's how it starts. And so it's about the idea of the shadow, and that we all carry with and in us these darker elements, like of the sort of dual, you know, the we have all the light, and then there's equal amounts of dark. And I think sometimes it's easy to kind of ignore our own darkness and, you know, focus on the light, which of course it's good to focus on the light. I mean, I certainly like to do that, but then I realized like that I can't not acknowledge the dark stuff. And I think, I mean, even collectively, it's so clear now. I feel that all these dark things are definitely have been coming out, and they're already there, and they have been there, and the whole system is built on a lot of darkness. And so I think that these things need to be acknowledged, seen, talked about, like light. We need to shine a light on it, basically. It's also not to be shamed, or, you know, like to be embarrassed by whatever darkness is happening inside of us or outside of it. But like, it always does start with, I believe, with yourself, and just going in inward and going, recognizing, well, where do I have that thing? Like, if I see someone and I'm like, you're, you know, whatever, like annoying for this or that reason, then I have to kind of stop and go, well, where am I annoying for this and that reason? And what is this? We're all kind of like these mirrors for each other. And I see that a lot in relation to the shadow and to our dark side, basically, that we, that is going to come out anyway, even if we don't, if we try not to, it will in other ways.
I think you said that so beautifully, and you know, I guess I just say this because you and I, like, we both have taken yoga classes, and I know, you know, a little bit about the work that you kind of do. So the concept of the shadow is something that you and I are both aware of, but it may not be for everyone out there. Mm-hmm. And I think that to put some context into it can help folks really understand the beauty of the song and the lyrics of your song. Mm. And I'll just add that, you know, for me, when I think of the shadow, it could be anything. It could actually be good parts of ourselves, but right. It's something that we are not seeing. It's right. In the darkness for us, right. And it's not seeing, we're not seeing it.
Yeah.
And as you say, you use the word shame, and that's such a perfect example of something that might be in our shadow. It's because we're ashamed of it. So we just bury it. We just put it back in that pocket, wherever it is. We don't ever look at it. But the reality is it's still there.
Exactly.
It's not gone.
Yeah. This idea that whatever is in there is there. So it's, it's not, whether it's visible or not. So that's become very interesting to me on all levels. Anything you feel, any vibration and frequency that you carry because of a certain feeling is gonna have an effect, whether you speak it or say it, or whether it comes out in another way. And that's the line, I guess, at the very end of the song. It speaks about shining a light on it so it can become whole, so we can become whole. And I feel like that's just the message for me around it, is that if we do embrace it and shine a light on it and get over the shame that we feel about our own darkness, then we can be a more complete and whole human.
Some of the words that you use, I just think are so compelling. When you say, in this world lies the key to our growth, and it's like, that to me is like, why wouldn't I want to grow?
Mm-hmm.
And at least I could say that in my own personal journey, I've come up against those things where you can try to deny something for a long time, but the longer you deny it, it's like the worse the confrontation is, because you are going to finally have to confront it.
Yeah.
And so once you're awakened to that, you have that awareness around things, then I think it becomes this fun game of what else is hidden there? Let's pull it out. And let's
I think once we can get over the shame, the embarrassment, or of having to keep up this certain image of ourselves that we're so, whatever, perfect in these or these ways, or good, we want to be good. And I think the idea of being good is overrated. It's because it's not about, what is that even? It's not about being good. It's about being real. It's about being whole.
The
journey to that is just, like you say, it's can become really fun, to sort of discover, and to, if we don't put that judgment on ourselves.
Are there things, you've kind of already expressed ways that you identify parts of your shadow. If you're seeing yourself responding to somebody, that might be a clue, maybe I should look inward. But is there any other type of practice or any other wisdom that you have kind of settled into as a result of your work with the shadow and creating this song?
There's a lot of practices, or a lot. I mean, I meditate, not that, I don't know how directly that is related to it, but it is related to it. And I do a Kundalini exercise daily. One of them is called the Fists of Anger, which and I think that's something for me that's very helpful. For anyone who's listening who doesn't know what that is, it's just a physical kind of rapid movement and breath work where you actually call up, the darker things that you're angry about or fearful about, or just generally whatever it is pissed off about. And then you bring that up. So, and while you're doing the moving, the idea being that the emotions can move, can be free, that they could be acknowledged. Again, I think just acknowledging is a big thing. And yeah, and what I did mention before, like in relationship with whomever, like when I notice myself judging or basically judging that I say stop, what's that? Why do I like, and then bring it back to myself. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. It's very powerful. So the process of writing the album, did you know you were writing an album or making an album, or at what point did you realize, hey, I've got an album here?
It was really fun. I didn't at first. I was just like, I'm at home, you know, like this was March. So everything had shut down. I was like not doing my usual, and I'm already somebody's like home 80% of the time. So it didn't change that much, but still I was going to the city and doing markets and stuff. I had work that kind of dropped, and then, you know, social life changed and shifted. So I was sort of inward, like, and I, yeah, the creation process started just by writing, and then the recording of a few songs, just thinking, this is fun. This is what I love to do this, and reconnecting with that part of me that's like at the computer playing with sound. And I think maybe 3-4 songs in, you know, there was this moment that I think of a friend also, like I'd let somebody hear some of the songs, and they were kind of like, sounds like an album is shaping. And then that kind of hit me like, yeah, it does. This is cool. So from then on, I became more, it became more of a focus as a body of work, even though it wasn't, you know, that still kept shaping and growing and shifting as the year went on.
This question just sort of came up into my curiousness, but you know, does it change the way you work when, let's say you're just, you know, creating a song because it brings you joy in your day and, you know, you're doing it, versus when you identify it as a project that that is like a package, you know, it's like a thing that exists now that you're working towards.
Yeah.
And does that change anything for you? Does it make it easier to do it? Does it, you know, does it put more pressure on anything or?
No, I think my answer would probably be no, it doesn't change it too much. Mm-hmm. I mean, there is an awareness of like a certain, that a continuity of sound. But it's almost like that happens anyway. That's sort of why the album is the album. So because then in this year, like I was doing more of this type of sound while I was recording. So it naturally, it's like when you're painting and sometimes you're just using a certain palette for weeks on end, like, and you can see that like, oh, that's the vibe. That's the main flavor. And I, in the recording that happens too, but it's almost like that happens more automatically than that I was constructing it in a, mm-hmm. in a conscious way. Yeah.
And when you're working on it, you know, are you setting a goal for yourself? Are you saying like, I want to release this in January of next year? Or do you let yourself just go with it?
Yeah. I first said once it started to become clear, oh, it's an album and I want to put it out, I thought 2020, so that I thought I want to have it out at the end of the year. And that just became, well, too soon. And it also felt better to let this year sort of like round off and move into the new, and then, or new, I mean, continuation of
right.
thing in a way. But of, you know, psychologically, there's that feeling like it's January. So I had January, February in my mind.
And when was the last time you put out an album?
Yeah, that was in 2008. I think it was 2008 or 7 even. Yeah.
How was the process different, if at all?
Yeah, it was different because this time I recorded and produced the whole thing by myself. So that I had a partner who mixed and mastered with me. So a local studio here in Hudson Valley, which was awesome. So I had that, but I did all the recording in my own little room. The last time I did the album was in Nashville. There was two that were very close to each other, and one was done in Holland, and that was somebody else produced the whole thing entirely. Like I just wrote and recorded the guitars, the vocals, and then basically they just went away and did what they did with it. And the other one was with my then music partner that I worked with for years, and we would just come together and sit and, you know, play around with sound. And so that was sort of co-produced, I guess. Mm-hmm. And in this scenario, it was all, it was very intimate in that way. It was very much my own little world, which mm-hmm. it always is, but even in a way, even more so.
What did it present any different challenges for you in order to?
Yeah, kind of... I mean, there's definitely, you know, I can't play a lot of instruments very well. So I play the guitar and my little keyboard, but I'm not really a keyboard player or even a guitar player. I feel like they're my instruments for writing and definitely recording. And, you know, it's amazing. Now you can just do a take, you know, 40 times if you want. So it's like, there's no pressure in that way. But yeah, the challenge would maybe be, yeah, also the technical, just the very technical part of it where I'm like, I can't get it to sound like the best it can possibly sound, like if it was done in a better studio or with a better player, but a better instrument quality, even stuff like that. So I felt like there may have been a limitation in that way, but I didn't see that as a limitation.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like, again, it's sort of like painting with an old brush. Like I still will do the best I can with the old brush, but then you kind of know if I had a really brand new brush, I probably could, there would be an ease and a different type of ease to it, but.
Interesting.
Yeah. But I didn't experience it as I said, limitation, but I didn't quite experience it that way.
Yeah. And as far as like the music itself, is it similar? I didn't listen to mm-hmm. That album. So I'd be curious to know, compared to the last one, is it mm-hmm. similar in sound and also content? Like the messaging?
I'd say yes. Like it's definitely, if you'll hear the older stuff, it's you recognize it right away, I think. Like, so it's, I can't get away from that. Like, that's sort of like, that's what I sound like once I start singing or something.
Yeah.
But maybe to me, somehow it feels smoother this time. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know if that even mm-hmm. is a real or if that's mm-hmm. imagined, but like the feeling behind it maybe was so much smoother. The intention somehow. But like, there's definitely, it's definitely a continuation mm-hmm. of the sound that I already kind of had.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd like to dip back into your LA story and mm-hmm. just sort of follow the trajectory of your life as you're kind of growing as a person and a creative artist. At what point did you leave LA? And for what reason?
Yeah, at that point, I stayed there for 5 years, about five, six. And I went back for a year to Holland. And the musical partner I was working with at the time, Marty, he also went to Holland. And we were just sort of like still doing our musical thing. And we did it in Amsterdam, played a lot of gigs that year and other little radio shows, whatnot. And we also recording and... So we, I wanted to touch base again with Hollands and experience Amsterdam and kind of LA at that point to me felt like I'd been there long enough. Yeah. Yeah.
Were you from Amsterdam? Is that where you grew up or did you grow up outside of
it? I grew up in a small town between, it's actually one of the lyrics on the song, The City and the Sea. The first line is, I came from a town between the city and the sea. And it was like Rotterdam is the city. And then there's the North Sea and kind of right in between there's all these small towns, like suburbs in a way. Mm-hmm. And I grew up in a little town. Yeah.
Beautiful.
Little city.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So then what made you then leave Holland again?
And then I left Holland again for Nashville for, I think I felt my American sort of journey or adventure hadn't come to a proper end. And I just up and left and went to Nashville. And that same music partner that I was working with, he was in Nashville at that time. And I was kind of like, yeah. And there was some visa stuff. My visa was going to end. And then if I didn't go in that time frame, it would. And then I was like, let's do it. And then So then I stayed in Nashville for 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I've been to Nashville. I guess I've been to LA, but I didn't really spend a lot of time there. How did you enjoy Nashville?
I really liked it. I loved it. It's very, I had no idea about it. I'd never been there. And I'd never really been anywhere in the States except for, LA. And I visited New York once long ago.
Mm-hmm.
And Nashville was super sweet. Like it's small-ish. I mean, it's big enough. And there was all this music. So it was cool. Like every other person you meet is somehow is a musician. They're super talented too. Like it's a hub, you know, like people go there to do this. So they're like very, there's that energy is in the air. So that was very cool. But of course I'm like not at all, country music is not at all the vibe of my stuff. So, but there was a cool alternative, you know, indie scene type of going on then.
On the surface, it feels very like, you know, I guess honky tonk kind of can be part of it and country.
Yeah, you have that whole scene there.
But
yeah.
But I haven't been there in a long time, but it did seem like a mecca for a lot of musicians.
Yeah, really. Yeah.
And that's when you started painting?
Yeah. Yeah. In Nashville. Such an unlikely, Nashville. opened up the visual arts for me. So I was like, just as a hobby, painting, tons of paintings. And my roommate was so, encouraging. And some friends were like, oh, you should show them. And this is so cool. And then I was like, yeah, okay, yeah, cool. And then we'd put them in some cafes. And people would respond well. And the first time I sold a couple of paintings, I remember just being like, wow. And then from there on, I started to focus more on it as a more of a full-time thing that I could do. Yeah.
Did you take, I would love to just understand. You went from not painting to painting and having your art being in cafes and sold. So did you just like pick up a brush and you just knew how to paint very well? Was there a practice phase? Did you study anything?
I didn't study. I am not a school kind of, I have never been, I don't want to say I'm not very good at school. Cause I mean, I thought I did okay, but it was just not I can't take that direction so easily. So I really feel like it comes from an inner place. It's an intuitive practice for me. And I follow that. And that's really what I also try to, that's what it's about in a way, is listening to that and go like, but still I don't want to knock school or art school or anything like that, because I think it could be really, really helpful and help someone become really good. And you know, but then you have to sort of again peel that away and in order to, what's my voice sort of thing. And with painting, I've been drawing a bit, you know, like it's not like it was the first time ever. Like I said, when I was a kid, I feel like I was also very creative in that way with drawing and with crafting. And so it felt very comfortable in a way, or natural, and like a really fun pastime. And the first time I painted, I just used two colors, blue and white. And I was just like, all right. And kind of scared almost to dive into the richness of the whole thing. And then, but then I did, you know, and maybe that there was those 2 years or so in Nashville at the end when I was living there where that became, yeah, just my, yeah, my thing. Like, I mean, yeah. Music was still my thing too.
Right. Well, it's funny because when I first met you, I mean, I follow you on Instagram and I would see your paintings, right? And cause you do some, yeah. You, I don't know if they're like videos, live videos, or just videos that you've taken of yourself painting and you post.
Yeah.
And they're beautiful and I love watching it. And so I've just fully identified you as a painter, right? And then you're like, and I released this album. And I was like, wow. But then I've subsequently now learned that that music has been in your life for a long time.
Other people would have had the same thing that you had, but the other way around, like, huh, you're a painter, like at some point. But I believe so much that like, there's the, it's again, that sort of box, right? That we want to put people in and that we're like, oh, they're so-and-so, such and such. That's what they do. Yeah. And then I don't really, yeah, that doesn't resonate as much because I feel like you can do, you know, many different things and then just sort of.
Yeah. Yes. It's actually, last week I had on a guest, who is now an interior designer, but she had many, I wouldn't say careers, but she had done a lot of different things. And she was of that mindset, like, you know, don't tell me that I can't do all these things, you know, I'm going to do them. And I was like, thank you for saying that and letting me feel permission to do the same thing.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
So we're going to listen to another song from the album. It's the title song. This is We Are the Ones.
We've been buying into the illusion that you're not me, that I'm not you, that we are separate, and that it's got something to do with what you look like, with where you came from, with how much money you possess, with what your folks like, what side of town you live, how many things you can get, and that's a lie. Lying to ourselves, all the freedom, the system is being. are the children, we are the ancestors in line. We are the spirits, we are the nature, we are the earthly and the divine. We are the rain, we are the children, we are the ancestors in line. We are the rights, we are the nations, we are the earthly and the divine. We are the people, we are the children, we are the ancestors in line. We are the rights, we are the nature, we are the earthly and the divine.
Yeah, that's right.
You're listening to I Want What She Has
on Radio Kingston, WKNY. AM 1490, FM 107.9 in Kingston, New York.
Hello, hello.
If you're just tuning in, I am talking to Edie Pipers today, who is an artist, musician, and other things to not be defined as any. And she just released a new album titled We Are the Ones, which you can find at edieart.com. And so that song we just listened to, the We Are the Ones song, is a bit of a heavy, I mean, it's light, right? It's like helping us like step into this idea that, you know, we are each other, and this beautiful idea of like taking care of one another kind of feeling. But I can't help but think that, you know, this came out of 2020 when like political conflict in our country was at its highest since I've probably been aware of political conflict. and it's reverberated throughout, you know, communities and whatnot. And I wonder if, you know, what you were thinking as you were writing that song. What were you hoping would happen? What are you envisioning for the future?
Well, the song was, funny enough, not written in 2020, but probably the year before. Like some of the songs, like maybe there was four-ish songs that I had written that I already had sort of written in the year before that. A friend of mine described it. She heard it and she said, "Ooh, that song is kind of like a cosmic snake bite."
I like that.
I mean, it speaks about, you know, the society and the structures that be and what is the truth underneath it and who are we and the system that is just, you know, was built on some big dark shit and like some lies and that we've been buying into, like that about, you know, the American dream. And I say the American, but it's kind of the Western dream, you know. It's an empire, and that started in Europe, and that, you know, because that's who founded America, right? The America as we know it,
right?
Or as we're talking about it now. So that is, you know, there's no I have this criticism of America. I feel like it could just as well be the West. Like,
yeah, America. I was sort of curious as to, you know, are you still close, tethered to what happens in Holland? Do you go back? Do you have family there?
Yeah.
And you know, what is the, because I do think like every country is kind of facing this very, very divergent conflict, right? Between far right and far left. It seems like it's almost everywhere. And so how is that happening in Holland, and what is, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I haven't been, of course, in a year at this point.
Yeah,
that's different, because we usually go, you know, once, twice a year. I speak Dutch to my daughter, so it's very alive with us and my connection to it. But then I don't know. I mean, I just know like it's similar everywhere in Europe, like the just tensions and people starting to not believe in their authorities, their systems, starting to understand how I think that the class and race structures of these societies, what they are, you know, like people are starting to really wake up to those things. So that's the same, I believe, in Holland as it is here. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a very different country, but it's also linked very mm-hmm. much, you know. We take also so much of American culture goes to Europe. It comes to Europe eventually. Like, you know, like when I was growing up, I'm born in 77. So, I mean, throughout the 80s, and it was probably, you could say, a socialist country, whereas a socialist capitalist. And then slowly it's just becoming more and more Americanized in mm-hmm. institutionally, you know, like the way maybe the banks function or like healthcare or things like that, privatization of things, that stuff is, they somehow follow mm-hmm. the American, example.
There is a element of we've got it all figured out. We know what's best. And I think on the surface, and I don't know if it's that there's an impression, right, that because America does have a lot of like global power, if that's like, then that makes folks elsewhere believe that that is the right model. Although I think we're realizing that like the global power, it doesn't really serve us individually, right? I mean, we're not kind of taking care of ourselves in that search for global power.
Yeah, and that's what that song is exactly about. Because when I say we are the ones, the line after that is we are the ones in charge of who we are, in charge of what we think, in charge of what we speak. So going into the space of like, we have to start owning ourselves mm-hmm. again or anew or whatever. I don't know how it, you know, it's always been probably some kind of system has always existed, but this system is particularly top down, dominant, you know, global.
Yeah.
So I think coming back to oneself and like, what do I really think about this? What do I really feel about that? What do I really, and self-inquiry and that shadow work is part of that, you know, like, cause there's a lot of shade out there, but then like, so how am I part of it? Cause we're all part of this system. Like we are the system. That's another line of the song, but I don't want to make it about blame. And I don't want to say, oh, it's them or it's him alone single-handedly, because I feel like it's never like that. It's a whole body organism that lives and breathes and that we've all been feeding in our own ways, you know, and for some very beneficially, for a lot of others not. And so, but either way, we are in this as an organism, like,
it's very profound what you just said to me, you know, as a somebody who works in like a yoga spiritual realm at times and thinks in that realm oftentimes, you know, it's always this idea like we're all one, we need to take care of one another, you know. Just the other day I posted something on Instagram you know, that carried that same theme. But at the same time, like, it's like I forget to acknowledge that we are all one right now, which means like, just as you pointed out, the people who I might be judging or pointing the finger at, it's like, I am one with them. Yeah. So I'm part of it. Yeah. And that's really important not to forget.
That's where, for me, the most interesting growth is. And I think because the people, you know, that I know think like me, act like me, and believe like me, that it's already sort of like, all right, well, I mean, it's not that means, I mean, I don't even know sometimes what that means. Like, I feel like the interesting bits come up when you encounter someone who doesn't think and act and believe like you, you know, to kind of go, okay, you know, they're just as much in their truth as I am in mine. And that's to acknowledge and respect that, even though we can, we should be able to talk about it. We should be able to disagree with each other and converse about things, but not coming from the space of, I need you to be like me. And I think that's what we see in the society.
It's a very hard thing for me to reconcile, because I agree 100%. Mm. But then there's also certain aspects, like if we talk about racism or, just predatory economic policies, I have a hard time stepping away from, you need to be like me, you know, because I do feel like there is a point where there's an objective right and wrong. And I don't know how to navigate that. Mm-hmm. Like that, I feel like, is the next frontier for me to understand how to reconcile that, because that's the struggle for me.
Yeah, it can be very hard to encounter certain violence and then be, what to do with that.
Yeah. And I'm guessing that there's just an acknowledgement of being able to go deeper with that individual and whatever is going on. Because I do also at the same time believe that anyone who is causing harm to anyone else has probably not worked through some of their own stuff. So they were probably harmed, or they have felt in whatever way. But it can be hard. It's just a very complicated web,
for sure,
to kind of walk through, especially when you're having a conversation possibly with somebody you don't know very well, even in passing. You know, it's hard to kind of go deep and get to that. But
yeah,
it's my hope that as a society we can do better at it.
Yeah, I believe we can.
Yeah,
I really believe we can. I mean, it might have to get messy, and it already is, but I think that we can.
You mentioned your daughter earlier. Was she the voice at the end of that song?
Yes. Yeah, she is.
Very sweet.
Yeah, that was a spur of the moment, because I'm recording everything at home, which I love, like working, in my home. Like I'll be doing recording for 15 minutes. Oh, finish this or that. And then I'm downstairs making dinner. Like it's all very part of one thing. And so that with her too came up in that same kind of way, where she came into the room and I was doing some stuff. And I was like, oh, why don't you, put these headphones on, try singing it. And then I left it in, because it was just,
That's great. I loved it. The voice, the legal ID, the ID of the show at the top of the hour, that's my niece's voice.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah. That's your niece. I was like, nieces, please do this. And only one of them would do it. It's my niece, Eva.
Awesome.
So how does your daughter create things? Does she have her own kind of stuff that she's creating?
Oh my God, she's super creative. Yeah.
How old is she?
She's 6.
Okay.
I mean, all kids are, I believe, first of all, but I know, they definitely have their own sort of propensities, a bit more, some are a bit more like this and others like that. But she is a total creator little being. Like she's singing, dancing, painting, drawing and painting is a big thing for her. She can spend hours, but singing, making songs, like all that stuff. Yeah.
And how do you talk to her about everything that's going on in the world, or do you not,
Yeah, I don't too much, but I don't censor a lot of things either. So, I mean, if things come up, we explain them to her to the point that you can explain things to a 6-year-old. So I don't, maybe we don't go into super detailed stuff, but she, it's as I go, I'm sort of improvising that. I don't have a very clear, I just feel like being honest with her and explaining things to her to the point where I feel like she can digest it intellectually.
Mm-hmm. How does she feel? you know, about the pandemic and the changes that she's seeing. Has her life had to change much?
Well,
I mean, she's younger, so.
Yeah. Yeah. I almost feel like this came up because I have some friends who have kids who are more like 9, 10. And I feel like that's much harder at that age. Mm-hmm. For her, she was 5 when, you know, oh, you don't have to go to school. I mean, she loves her school, but she was just like, yay, I can stay home all day. And she's also a kid, like very happy to entertain herself and to play alone a lot. And she's our only kid so far. So she's like, you know, used to being in her own. So I think she was just super happy to stay home. Like she's still in that, you know, I'll stay home with mommy and daddy. And then that was making, but now she's back in school and that's good too. I mean, it's great for her to interact with other kids.
Yeah.
And for us, you know, like it does give you the time needed to, yeah, to sometimes just do something for 2 hours uninterrupted. And
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have some friends. I haven't been really that tuned into what's going on with the schools around here. Mm-hmm. But I have some friends in other places, in Chicago specifically, where they're just struggling. And and I just know that it's very hard on parents and moms and whatnot. So
yeah. No, it is. And if you, you know, I think also for myself, I was already kind of used to this type of lifestyle where I work from home, where, you know, my partner's home all day too. So we're both like taking on that childcare in that way too. It was a big change, but it wasn't like our whole lives came to a halt in that way.
Yeah.
Which I know for a lot of people it is. And that's intense, you know?
Yeah. So it's time to listen to another song from the album. And this one is called Nature Knows.
Nature grows to the light. Nature knows where it's got to go. Let us grow to her. Time. ourselves.
Hey, Edie, let's talk a little bit about the song, Nature Knows.
Nature Knows.
What are you talking about in that song?
I'm talking about the nature, be it actual nature, the trees, the air, the soil, like, or nature in even in ourselves, that we are part of that, that we are nature, that we are one big living organism, this earth, and we're part of that, the same as the trees and the flowers and the animals and the water. And so that we're made of the same things. Like I'm always like still just mind blown and amazed at that. Like we are made of the same elements, the same pieces and materials as all the stuff that we see. And so that's what the song is about, is to trust that a little bit more, to reconnect more again to that which we are in, that in the material sense, like the earth. So it's kind of like a song to honor and bring to light that idea or that truth, that we are the same thing as nature. And like you were saying before, something about the cycles, the year, even the seasons, like to sort of, it's winter, it's beautiful, I never used to like the winter, and then since I've moved upstate, I kind of feel like the winter is so, in its own way, so nourishing and necessary, and just part of it, you know, like that's the recognition of that, like that everything in nature has its cycle. So it's also about that, like life, death, and everything in between, the blooming of something and then the decaying of it. I'm singing getting to know ourselves, which I feel like getting to know our true nature, like what are we? Who are we? Looking at that or feeling into that, exploring that through the lens of how we are part of this all, this greater reality than just sort of the material, society, man-made kind of structured thing, the machine that we have created. And like in a way what the other song was about too, and in some way all the songs are connected to this same topic, like we're dismantling like that idea, like that, you know, what is it that we venerate, like what is it that we serve, like, and we have a lot of it at this moment where the capitalist society has corrupted a lot of that truth, that of what we really are.
Yes. It's interesting. This morning, I do a little, short practice on Instagram. And this morning, for some reason, I sort of like thought about how our bodies, how our beings are sacred, and how we get really disconnected from that.
Yeah.
And just like you're saying, how we, it almost becomes like we are just these cogs, like we are just taskmasters, and it gets very disconnected from the sacredness of life as a whole. And I realize like maybe not everyone wants to be connected to the sacredness, but for folks who are religious or spiritual, this is an element of that.
Mm-hmm.
And for the folks who aren't religious or spiritual, that you know, to think about, is that a missing part of your life? Just this concept of what is sacred to you. I had written a blog post recently called "What Do You Worship?" And it's that same thing that you're talking about, you know, it's like, where are we giving our time and attention and energy? And is it really to what we truly value most?
Yeah.
Or is it just part of the routine because it's like we're stuck in it, or because we think we're expected to, or, you know, and it doesn't mean, you know, that I try to be careful about being too presumptuous or speaking too much on behalf of like the collective, right? Because it's, I'm just really speaking me, but, you know, even when life can't be sacred, the reason that I thought about this morning about our bodies and ourselves as being sacred is I was thinking about this thing I learned recently in a class about how to eat well. And it was sort of like, what are the best choices when you're traveling? Like, let's say all you have is a convenience store to stop at, you know, and sort of like educating folks on what were the best choices in that situation. And the final thing was, when all else fails, like when you just can't find anything, at least bless your food, you know, at least just bless it, bless whatever it is that you're eating. Yeah. And so it was this awareness that everything we do can be made into a sacred thing, even if it's not quote unquote, you know, like the most natural thing or whatever, you know, that we would consider to be holy or precious or whatever. And, but it's the intention.
I love that you say that, because I think that's a very big part of it. Cause we do, and a lot of us have to do things that we might not consider sacred or, you know, but it's just, you know, you got to do it. And the intention that you do it with is everything, I believe. And that comes down to just sort of an awareness and a consciousness, an awakeness to the moment, to what you're doing, to who you are, to all that. And you can do that within anything, you know? I could go and eat a hamburger at McDonald's and still be like, well, this is exactly the flavor I needed right now. Mm-hmm. If that's what I chose to do, you know, like, and to not sort of judge myself or another for that, but to keep aware of, well, is that the best thing? Like, do I need that? You know, what is the flavor giving me? You know, what is the, and sort of to always go into that process of questioning, like, what will make me feel the best? And I think that's that sort of inner growth journey, like to always question all the things we do, all the things we consume, all the things we express. Like, why am I doing it? And what is the intention behind it? And then if sometimes the intention is, well, I'm just going to binge watch this show because it feels amazing or whatever, then to know that that's all right too, you know, like that's where I think, like, that's where religious can become, or religions, right, become, what do you call it? Like, dangerous.
Dogma,
when dogma sets in and you're like, well, you can't, you know, and then it's sort of like, wait, I can, as long as I, you know, you just sort of stay, you gotta kind of, I guess, know when you lose control completely, like that, you know, okay, pull back, wait.
Yeah.
But if you're aware of what you're doing and you kind of keep a,
Well, and you said earlier about how, you know, you meditate and, you know, whether or not it's directly connected to seeing the shadow work and, you know, et cetera. But I think it's like that meditation practice is, in all likelihood, that practice that helps keep us present in the moment, which is, that is the only way we're ever going to know and stay connected to our choice in the moment, is to be present about it, which I am not perfect at it. I've been, especially when it comes to certain things, I've been very accustomed to going from one task to the next very quickly.
And
oftentimes not having enough time to eat, you know, so I'm quickly eating a snack just to get nourishment in my body. And to me, I'm trying to actively undo that programming, which is unfortunately, the situation for so many who work demanding and lead demanding lives, you know, having children, mm-hmm. raising families, working jobs, all of this, it just puts so much pressure on. So it is so hard to be fully present throughout the day. Mm-hmm. But that's the meditation, I think, just helps to keep you.
I think the meditation, to me, it gives me a sort of a home base. Like, I feel like when I sit in meditation and then I cultivate and practice being in the space that is just being. And the more I get to know that place, so the more familiar I become with it, the easier it gets. Like when I, cause I'm also like you, I'm quite like, I like to, you know, do many things, like, and I run from here to there and doing, oh, I got an idea, do it quick. You know, like I'm kind of a fast fire sign type of person in that way. So like, I feel that having the stillness to cultivate that a little bit, and it gives me the space to like, wait, breathe, you know, like, and to keep coming back to that, even if it, and it serves me a lot, like it really, really helps me, tremendously. Like, even if it, you know, if I'm still, you know, you might still get stressed or whatnot, but to have something to come back to, the breath and the present moment awareness.
Yeah. I imagine, at least I should say this, when I do things like paint or make music, it feels like being in the present moment. It's a different form of practicing that.
Yeah.
And so I wondered if you relate to your creative work that way.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely, you could almost call it a spiritual practice, I think. Mm-hmm. And to me, art, like creating, cause it's, so that's the blessing for in my life that I feel that I can be doing this. And I am doing this. It's like, because as soon as you're doing it, I mean, in the good like there's definitely moments where I might just be like, I got to get this part right. Or, you know, I'm just sort of, And it might not be always this kind of blissful experience, but all in all, it's always something that just drops you in into that, into the moment, into mm-hmm. the flow zone, whatever it's mm-hmm. it's called.
How do you, let's talk about your art before we run out of time entirely.
We could just talk for hours.
How do you describe your art to others?
Well, I always say colorful because it's always super colorful. Colorful, dreamscapes, sort of imaginative landscapes and places and fantasy infused images with often children as the subjects. That's about it.
Yeah. I found myself when I was like posting on Instagram for the show, I used some words and I was like, I hope she's not offended. I called it whimsy.
Whimsy. Yeah, that's a good word to describe it. I wouldn't be offended. And whimsy, whimsical. I mean, that's what people, so I was selling my art and still would be, you know, on a weekly basis, but in the city, in streets and markets and whatnot. And that's the word that I literally heard about 20 times a day. People would be like, oh, so whimsical. So, I mean, it's just what comes to mind, you know, when people see it.
Yeah. And so the form, like, of the art, are you selling posters? Like how does the art go packaged out to somebody? I know you've made some children's books.
Yeah. Children's books, mainly prints. So I have my own little setup and I print the art prints and I sign them. And then that's what I offer on my store. So that's what I mainly do. And I have started to also use, work with some other companies where they print large size posters because there was always an ask for that. Mm-hmm. And then original work, but like prints is the main product that mm-hmm. that the arts became.
And has it been difficult because of the fairs and a lot of things, markets haven't been happening. How is your art getting out into the world?
Yeah, it was very interesting to see that so all the market stuff shut down. So I couldn't go and participate and do my normal. So the year's definitely been like work-wise a lot less for me than it usually is. But the online sales have come up. So there's this, and I think, I mean, that's the only way people are shopping this last year. And then maybe ideas around it were too, that maybe people are at home and if they have the means and to be online shopping, that they want to beautify their homes or like add something into the house that makes it a little bit more colorful and to be in. And so I don't know if that's true, but mm-hmm. That's definitely what's been the case. Like sort of online has been more busy. Yeah.
And then how did you branch out into like the animation stuff?
The animation stuff was something I started also, I think, from being in New York on the streets selling and just people communicating with people all day. It was so fun. And like so many people were always saying, oh, I see a movie. This work needs to be a movie. And I was always very on board with that idea. I was like, I'd love for it to be a movie. And so that's where the animation came from. And then because animators are they're not hard to find maybe, but like it's very expensive
to
hire an animator. And I was like, I'll just DIY it. Learn a little bit of After Effects is the program I use for all the visual video stuff. So I started learning that when I in the city, like, well, probably by now 8 years ago, 10 years ago, longer than that. And just playing with it very much on the sideline, like, you know, here and there, spend a few hours. But that's over time. Now I feel like I can put some things together, and that's how I did the videos for the music. Yeah.
And you made a video for, what is, Jai Jagdish. Was that her song?
Yeah. That one, so oh God, like I took a class. She's a Kundalini singer for people who are listening. Like her voice is just, I did the class, and then I, at the end, we're lying down and the teacher played that song, and it's like an 8 minute song or something. So it was just this, like, I was just hit with something. I was like, what is this music? After class, you know, I asked and then found the song, and it was, I just really wanted to be in that world and create something. And that's the first time I'd done that. And then I reached out to her and her label and said, like, oh, is this cool with you guys if I'll make a video and put it in? They were like, yeah, please, you know. And so that's out there. Jagdish in Dreams, it's called.
That's so great. And you have that on your website, right?
It's on the website. Yeah. And on the YouTube mm-hmm. page.
Do you think of, like, you know, when you're thinking about your art, I mean, are you planning content for it? Where do you come up with the ideas like this? Obviously you just explained the inspiration for that video work, but how do you get inspiration for the painting. Other paintings?
Yes. Yeah, some come in meditation, like images, and it might just be lying in bed before I go to sleep, like, you know, just sort of visualizing or allowing my imagination to sort of run wild. Like that can be how something comes. Sometimes I already know. Sometimes I'm like, oh yeah, I want to do, you know, a little group of kids and an animal and a thing and a fire, whatever. Like, and then I kind of, it's more planned. That happens as well. Sometimes it literally is, I don't know what to paint, but I feel like painting. So I'll start and I'll just literally start making rounds and colors. And that can take it. What you said you paint too. I don't know if you experience it in that way sometimes, like where
I mean, I'm such an amateur painter that I work more from models as like the starting point. I've been taking a lot of different classes to kind of like prime the pump, I like to call it. I'm not quite there yet where I can just go to a page and have things come out. I love to hear your process around that.
The funny thing, that's why I was kind of like, I don't know how to put it into words, because, and then maybe if you experience the same, like the, because that process is really just a dive into the deep, and it's just sort of like, I'll see, you know, and then a shape comes as I sort of paint, and some subjects always come up. Like I paint women, kids, the natural world, or some kind of cosmic scene and something. So it always sort of ends up going there, but then, yeah, it's so hard to explain. It's like, and that's why I think, and you used it in the intro where I had said something about mistakes don't really exist. Like, I think with painting, that's very clear to me that, like, you know, if I do something and it's like, oh, oops, you know, that can be made into a part of the painting or directed into something. Mm-hmm. And that sort of requires that trust, like to like allow something else to lead almost, like where, but then to jump onto the wagon as it shows up. Like, yeah.
I like that as a metaphor for life in general.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
No mistakes.
You yeah. Just... No. And the whole idea around failure is just, is BS if you ask me, because it's like, that doesn't really exist. Like if you fail, quote unquote, like there's no such thing in a way, because it's all part of one thing. Like, you know, yeah.
It's just your perception, right?
Your perception.
It's like you just have judged it in a certain way.
Yeah.
And you can choose not to.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. 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 And even with art, that became very clear when, and sometimes with songs too, like sometimes I love something I made and I'm like, oh, this is just, you know, I love it. And then I present it and people are totally lukewarm about it. And then sometimes there's a painting that I think like, I'm not even really going to show that. I don't like it. And I do show it and people respond to it. So there's this kind of like, we don't know what is a success or a failure, you know, like it's sort of redefining what success means is important.
Absolutely. We're going to sneak in one more song before the show ends, and then we'll talk a little bit about self-care. The song is called Poets of the New World.
Who do we wanna be?
So I like to talk about self-care in every show. And in an effort to try to like expand people's ideas of self-care, I've been doing this 40-day practice to nourish our body, mind, and spirit. And I feel like spirit is like a part of self-care that gets a little neglected. You know, people often think about, you know, how do I take care of my body? That's self-care. But I feel like there's more components and facets to it. But I thought it was really kind of sweet because we started the show and you were talking about, you know, like the first type of music that you were creating in LA. And I was sort of like, you know, along the lines of like, what's my purpose? Like, what am I doing here? And we just listened to this song, Poets of the New World. And it's like, what do we want to be? And I just thought like, that is, you know, like that's such a beautiful question to be asking yourself when you think about really nourishing your spirit, you know, like, it's like, how do I walk through my life with this like intention? Like I'm aware of my presence and how it is affecting others and how I am feeling alive about my life. And you seem to be somebody who has like kind of figured it out. I don't, you know, that's a big assumption, but
yeah, you know. It's a big assumption, but thank you.
But if I like ask you, how do you nourish your spirit? You know, like it feels like you have so many ways, but do you want to just talk a little bit about how that relates to you, how you relate to that?
Yeah. I mean, art is for me that a lot. Like, because I was saying before, like art is almost like that spiritual practice, or I could just call it self-care practice. I mean, creating, sitting with a guitar or with some colors, like is in and of itself such a nourishing for the spirit. I think that's a huge part of it for me. Or that's what.
And it's really beautiful because it, like consuming, maybe that's not the most sexy word, but like as somebody who receives the work that you create, right? It actually has that effect to like nourish my spirit.
Wow. Cool.
So that's like this beautiful like cycle of, you know, this, when you talk about like, you know, we are all one and how we are all connected. And so thinking about what am I consuming that is being created by others out there and how is that nourishing me? I'm sort of just like being in this in my body right now with you.
I think, what I take in, like consuming, cause you're that, you know, like it's also very important, like on a non-physical level. Cause of course, you know, eating and all these things and like, what do you do with your body, whatnot, but like spiritual or like, mental consumption, whatever you want to call it. Like I try to be very aware of that.
Yeah.
Like I love watching really good movies, but like I try to not take in too much media.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's very important because I think that we are just inundated and it's super addictive. And I know for myself, like all the stuff around social media, it's something to be like really aware of. And like, I'm certainly not perfect at that, but like that I'm always, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Aware.
Yeah. That's a big one for me. It's one I'm actively working on, but it is that whole idea of like, what am I consuming? So I'm grateful that you put out your album. We Are the Ones. And it's been a really beautiful experience for me to take it all in. And so I'm grateful for that for sure. And I thank you for being my guest today.
Thank you for expressing that. Thank you for having me on the show. It's so lovely.
Yeah. We got to have our tea separate and apart. Yeah. But still, it was like a little catch up and tea chat. So just a reminder to everyone, you can find Edie on the internet, E edart. I shouldn't have said it that way. It's edart.com. edieart.com. And that'll launch you off to everything. So that's all you've got to remember. And and so enjoy it. Definitely, if you're on social media, check out her social media feeds too, because I love the little things that you put out there. That's like my daily inspiration when I see folks that have their creative work out there. So
yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. And big thanks to Nick for driving the dials back at the mothership of Radio Kingston. And thanks to Shauna Falana, who always provides our show theme music. I found an old picture of Shauna and I from 2 years ago when we were, were we still doing the show together at the time? I don't know. It was one of those moments at Radio Kingston where we each had like 3 bags on each shoulder because we're always carrying tons of bags. And it was a lovely memory to revisit. So thanks to Shauna. Ida's coming up next. And until next week, friends, please do love yourself and uplift one another.